So I want you to imagine something. Imagine you're just stepping into your kitchen, right? You go to grab a glass of cold water, and you realize that your refrigerator is currently negotiating the price of electricity, like on the open market.
Right, actively hunting for a bargain.
Exactly. It's leveraging its own internal temperature to literally get paid for keeping your food cold. And, you know, historically, we treat appliances as these just static liabilities, dumb boxes that just drain power.
Yeah, you plug a device into the wall, a centralized utility bills you for the electrons at the end of the month, and that's it. The transaction is entirely one way.
But the sources we're exploring today, they completely dismantle that old model. We're doing a deep dive into a panel transcript from the Piercy Foundation's Australia 4.0 Thought Leadership Initiative.
Which is really a fascinating look at the future of infrastructure.
It really is. Our mission today is to unpack this massive transition to what they call the consumer's grid. So moving away from a world where massive centralized coal plants dictate our power, right? Toward this highly decentralized reality.
A reality where our homes, our cars, and even our kitchen appliances are essentially the new power plants.
Yeah, and that's a huge conceptual leap for you as a consumer.
It is. The stakes here are high.
Yeah.
This isn't just a simple technology upgrade. It's a fundamental change in our role. We're transitioning from being passive load points to, well, active participants in the grid.
Which sounds great, right? More control.
It does. But with that power comes immense complexity. You start running into huge questions regarding data, network privacy, and just the physical stability of the whole system.
So to understand how this macro level shift works, we kind of have to look at what's happening inside the modern home first. And the panel brought in this consumer advocate, Mark Purcell, who has a setup that just illustrates this perfectly.
Yeah, his home is essentially a micro trading floor.
Seriously, he uses a retailer called Amber, and what they do is instead of charging a flat rate, they pass the wholesale dynamic pricing directly to him.
Which fluctuates constantly. So
Yeah.
to manage that, his home uses an open source home energy management system, or a HEMS.
Right, a HEMS. And this system is just constantly hunting for cheap prices. So back to that fridge we talked about, his fridge is programmed to be price aware.
Meaning it knows when energy is abundant on the grid.
Exactly. When energy is cheap and green, say in the middle of the day, the fridge runs its compressor hard. It intentionally chills the freezer down to minus 24 degrees Celsius.
It's essentially using the frozen food as a thermal battery.
Yes. And then when energy becomes scarce in the evening and the price spikes, the fridge just backs off. It lets the temperature slowly drift back up to minus 18 degrees.
So it's coasting on that thermal mass it built up when the power was practically free.
Right. And his bidirectional EV charger and his hot water system do the exact same thing, which, if you think about it, is just like how we currently buy airline tickets, you know?
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, you don't pay a flat fee for a flight. The price changes based on demand and timing, so it makes zero sense to pay a flat rate for electricity when the wholesale price changes every 5 minutes.
Especially because sometimes that price goes negative. The grid gets so congested with excess solar generation that they literally pay you to use power.
Well, wait, let me push back here for a second. Do I really want to be day trading electricity commodities just to like make a piece of toast?
Nobody wants that mental load. Monitoring 5-minute dispatch intervals manually would be a nightmare.
Right, which is why automation is the entire key to this. The devices absolutely must do the trading for us. You set the boundaries, like keep the freezer below minus 18, and the system does the rest.
But if automation is the answer, that means we have to connect all our appliances to the internet, which brings us to a massive risk.
Yeah, what happens when we blindly connect our very private lives to the public grid?
Well, ACCC Commissioner Ian Opperman brought up some really cautionary tales about this exact technology convergence during the panel.
He talked about the Jocko robot, right?
He did. The Jocko robot is this new 4-foot-tall robot with 27 degrees of freedom. It synthesizes AI, sensors, and mechanics so well that it can safely interact with children.
Which is wild. Just 5 years ago, industrial robots had to be locked in steel cages because they were essentially blind.
Exactly. And Opperman contrasts this incredible marvel with a 2015 smart fridge. This fridge was compromised in a botnet attack and sent out 750,000 spam emails.
Oh my gosh, yes. The infamous Nigerian prince in the freezer anecdote. It's funny, but the implications are actually terrifying.
They really are. If a fridge has enough processing power to negotiate energy trades, it is a prime target for hackers.
Right, so if my fridge is smart enough to buy electricity, it's smart enough to be hacked. So how do we actually secure a grid made out of millions of vulnerable household appliances?
It's a huge engineering problem.
Yeah.
And beyond the cyber threat, there's the immediate data privacy issue.
Because of what the data reveals about you.
Exactly. The frequency of you opening your fridge or the compressor turning on reveals your habits. It tells algorithms exactly how many people are in your home and what your daily routine is.
So to secure and manage this chaotic new grid, system operators can't just react to things as they happen. They have to map and simulate the entire environment.
Which is where Opperman brings in these seemingly bizarre biological mapping examples.
Yeah, I thought this part was fascinating. He started talking about fruit flies.
Right. So scientists recently mapped the entire brain of a fruit fly. We're talking 139,000 neurons and 50 million connections.
That's just the scale of that is mind-boggling.
It is. And they did it to create a perfect software simulation, a digital twin, so they can predict exactly how that fly will react to visual stimuli without needing the physical fly.
Which he then compared to the Henrietta Lacks case.
Yes. In 1951, her biological cells were harvested without consent to create immortal cell lines for medical research. Opperman asks a really pointed question here.
What if they had built a high-fidelity digital model of her cells instead? Who owns that highly personal data?
Exactly. And connecting this directly to the grid, we are currently doing this. We're building digital twins of the entire built environment, like the state of New South Wales.
They're tracking utilities and even human flow. So we're essentially building a massive, high-fidelity SimCity version of the real world.
Yes, to run simulation.
To see what happens when, say, a million EVs plug in at the exact same moment.
But here's the catch. Building a perfect SimCity simulation is totally impossible if the individual pieces of the grid refuse to speak the same language.
The architecture problem.
Right. Opperman explains the absolute necessity of standards. He cites the 1938 ASC 112 Australian plug standard.
Before that, every country and region had completely different physical plugs, right?
They did. Standardization was what allowed the early grid to flourish. You could buy an appliance anywhere, and it would physically work.
But the sources show we're kind of failing at this in the modern software era.
Oh, massively.
Yeah.
Mike Hewitt from the UK's Smart DCC talked about this. When the UK let the industry interpret the SMETS 1 smart meter standards, it was a disaster.
Because they used proprietary software handshakes.
Exactly. So when customers tried to change their energy suppliers, the meters literally broke. They couldn't authenticate, so they just stopped talking to the grid entirely.
And Mark Purcell had a personal cautionary tale about this too, didn't he? The walled garden issue?
He did. He had this automated garage door connected to his home energy system. And one day, the vendor just arbitrarily decided to close off cloud access.
They bricked his local automation just to trap him in their proprietary ecosystem.
Exactly. It's a classic walled garden maneuver.
So let me ask you this. If we don't get these open software standards locked down right now, are we headed for a fragmented nightmare? Like a situation where my Tesla battery flat out refuses to talk to my local power grid?
That is exactly the risk we are running if regulators don't mandate open standards immediately.
Okay, but let's say we fix that. Let's say we establish open standards and everything is connected seamlessly.
Well, then a completely new physics problem emerges. What happens when all these automated devices decide to act at the exact same millisecond?
Oh, right. Hannah Heath from the Australian energy market operator AEMO warned about this. She called it the herd effect.
Yes. AEMO traditionally deals in massive megawatts from centralized coal plants. They are not used to dealing with millions of individual kilowatts from automated homes.
Which leads to the Ono-Ovo effect in Victoria.
The Ono-Ovo effect is the perfect example of this. Imagine a local street where a bunch of neighbors all program their EVs to start charging at exactly 11:00 a.m.
Because that's when the solar power is peaking and the price is cheapest. Makes total sense for the individual.
It makes rational sense, yeah. But at exactly 11:00 a.m., all those chargers trigger a massive synchronized power draw.
And pulling that much current instantly causes the localized voltage to just drop.
It plummets. And modern EVs have sensitive safety inverters. When they detect that voltage drop, they think there's a fault on the grid, like a downed wire.
So to protect themselves, the cars just abort the charging sessions entirely.
Exactly. The synchronized attempt to save money mechanically breaks the power supply, and everyone wakes up with a dead car battery.
Wow. And Mark Purcell actually had data on how sensitive this elasticity curve is.
He did. His tracking showed that for every 10-cent drop in the spot price of electricity, a cohort of 10,000 consumer energy houses will predictably consume an extra 1 megawatt of energy.
Instantly. The algorithms are just ruthlessly efficient.
They are.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. If everyone acting at 11 a.m. breaks the system, shouldn't we just stop offering these flat time-of-use tariffs? Like, give people highly dynamic pricing so they ramp up gradually instead of all at once.
That is the engineering solution, yes. If the price curve softens over an hour, the algorithms trigger at different times based on their specific needs.
So a freezer might start cooling at 10.45, but a car waits until 11.15. It desynchronizes the herd.
Exactly. But Hannah points out that while dynamic pricing solves the engineering issue, it creates a massive equity problem.
Because highly dynamic pricing sounds great if you own a home and can afford EVs and massive battery setups.
Right. But what about everyone else? Not everyone has the capital or the roof space to play the spot market.
Which leaves lower-income households and renters subsidizing the old legacy grid.
Exactly. This is why we are starting to see things like solar soaker or solar sponge tariffs.
I love that concept. Tell me how the solar sponge works.
Basically, grid operators offer renters and low-income households incredibly cheap, or sometimes free energy in the middle of the day.
To soak up the excess solar energy that the grid physically can't handle?
Right. It incentivizes them to run high-load things like washing machines, paying them to act as a localized energy sink to stabilize the network.
And Tim Barson from Amber noted that this is kind of the future. The era of making huge windfall profits off wild price spikes is mostly ending.
Yeah, as more batteries come online, the demand curve flattens out. The future is much more about saving money and aggressive self-consumption.
Which brings up some cool hardware innovations that are bridging this gap for people without houses. Like the UK's Octopus Nook.
Oh, the Octopus Nook is brilliant. It's essentially a small balcony battery designed specifically for apartments.
And they also mentioned the Swaptopus, which are swappable EV batteries.
Right, which decouples the expensive battery asset from the actual vehicle purchase, making it more accessible.
It really feels like we're moving away from buying electricity by the kilowatt and moving toward a mobile phone data plan model.
That is a highly accurate analogy.
Like, you don't care how the cell towers route your call. With energy, you'll just buy a small, medium, or large subscription.
And the grid's operating system figures out all the chaotic voltage and routing details behind the scenes.
So, to wrap this journey up for you listening, we are definitively moving from a world of centralized control to the consumer's grid. Our smart fridges, our balcony batteries, our cars, they are the new infrastructure.
But realizing this potential is going to require some strict boundaries. We need open standards to prevent those walled gardens, massive data sharing, and real protections against things like the spam fridge vulnerabilities.
Absolutely. And there's one final really provocative concept derived from these sources that we want to leave you with today. The ACCC is currently exploring something called action initiation within the consumer data right.
This is where the legal complexity just skyrockets.
Because traditionally, data rights are just about sharing your data, like read access. But action initiation means moving beyond that. It legally empowers algorithms to initiate actions for you.
Like buying and selling your home's power automatically, signing contracts on your behalf in a fraction of a second.
Exactly. So here is the provocative question we want you to mull over. Let's say an AI is legally initiating trades on your behalf using your home battery. And that AI accidentally joins a herd of 50,000 other AI agents that crashes the local power grid.
Who is actually responsible?
Is it you, because you granted the permission? Is it the app developer who wrote the algorithm? Or is it the grid operator whose digital twin failed to predict the simulation?
It is a staggering legal gray area that we have to figure out.
It really is. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the consumer's grid. It's a wild transition, and we will catch you on the next one.